all you beautiful body bastards, and welcome back to Body Ballads, where we look at many of the forgotten, hilarious, and often dirty old songs of the past. Along the way, we'll explore all those things that make life just a bit more interesting. There's trickery, infidelity, loving, drinking, fighting, and while we dig into these songs, we'll talk about all kinds of stuff. Archetypes, history, folklore, and share the way these songs connect with the present. A fair warning before we begin, this show does discuss adult themes and topics, including violence, sex, and my own foul mouth. And as always, make sure to check the show notes for links, including bodyballads.com, where you can share your creations with me and see the show transcripts and additional links if you're curious to learn more. And with that said, let's get to today's episode. Welcome back, everybody. And I know, it's been a minute. But that is entirely because your girl been busy with the beginning of a new school year. Also some ADHD and other stuff, but busy. All of which leaves very little time for side projects. That said, it's likely that I'll only be getting out a new episode every other week or so for a bit. I mean, if I wanted to just present the songs, this podcast would take no time at all, but to make it mean something takes time. Anyways, I hope the wait pays off because this one is going to be a longer one. Now, if you've been paying attention, then you'll notice that there has been a lot of unplanned pregnancy in many of these songs, the outcomes of which can vary wildly. Sometimes you and the baby get murdered like Polly. Sometimes you end up on the street with your kid only to leave it with some John. But most of the time you just ended up on the street with your kid only to die early. One of the things we haven't talked about though is abortion. Because it, like everything else we've talked about, is absolutely nothing new. So today I thought we'd look at a couple of examples of abortion being mentioned, and then look at the granny women tradition of Appalachia that was a direct descendant of traditional village herbalism and healing. I want to give a quick shout out to the podcast The Strange South, who gave me a bit of inspiration on this one and their 103rd episode, Granny Women and Cotton Roots. Now, if you like Southern urban legends and mysteries, then please go give them a listen. Even if you don't, and you like that sassy Southern lady tone, then please go give them a go, because they, again, are amazing. Anyways, abortion. Today we'll start with a really well-known ballad that is a part of the Child Collection, and that's called Tam Lin. It's also one of the songs that got me into this topic in the first place. The ballad or story of Tam Lin is from the Scottish Borderlands, which is the area, as you may have guessed, that is the border between England and Scotland. And it's a place that is truly overflowing with story and myth, and Tam Lin remains one of the most popular among all the witches, red caps, and pixies. It's been made into a story, song, movie, and a couple of books. I mean, multiple of all those, honestly. And here's one of the reasons I love this song so much. It's fantastical, but also there's enough truth in it to make one wonder if it is in fact real. I would even argue that it's a very early example of a type of literary fiction called magical realism. Now that I think about it, I guess a lot of early folk and fairy tales are magical realism, and now I'm going to stop my ADHD self from going on to a side research and make a note. Anyways, those are the kind of stories I live for, ones where only the thinnest of veils divide between one world and the next. There's evidence of the place names in the story, too. Tamlin is said to live in Carter Hall, which letters from 1598 show were held by a Sir Walter Scott of Branksome, which he had held in lordship for some time. It lies between Branksome and the village of Lyne, which was held by the De Lynn family until the 1200s, when it was settled in marriage to the De Hays. Now, the original is in what's called Scots dialect, which, if you aren't familiar with, can be a bit hard because there are a lot of words that seem familiar to the average English reader, but unless you are used to reading or speaking it, it can cause some confusion or some questioning of exactly what things mean. So I have gone ahead and I'm going to read you the original, but I've changed out some of the Scots words for their English counterpart so that this is more understandable for a larger audience. And I don't mean this in any way to say that people shouldn't try and understand Scots dialect, because I 100% think they should. But I also am a teacher who understands that getting the passion and the content across can sometimes be a bit more important. Now, the first mention of the song was from 1549 in the Complaint of Scotland, but nothing of the song was published until 1769 when fragments appeared in Hurd's Ancient and Modern Scottish Songs. However, it has remained popular, and for that reason, it made its way into the ballad collection of Child. And that's the one version I'm going to read from. I'm going to read from a Child's Version 39A. So, without a whole bunch more rambling, I give you the Ballad of Tamlin. Oh, I forbid you, maidens all that wear gold in your hair, to come or go by Carter Hall, for young Tamlin is there. There's none that goes by Carter Hall, but they leave something there, either their rings or green mantles, or else their maidenhead. Janet has kilted her skirt, green skirt, a little above her knee, and she has braided her yellow hair a little above her brow, and she's away to Carter Hall as fast as she can. When she came to Carter Hall, Tamlin was at the well, and there she sees his steed standing, but away was himself. She had not pulled a double rose, a rose but only two, till upon then started young Tamlin, says, "Lady, thou must pull no more. Why pulls thou the rose, Janet, and why breaks thou the wand? Or why comes thou to Carter Hall without my command?" "Carter Hall is my own. My daddy gave it to me, and I'll come and go by Carter Hall and ask no leave at thee." Janet has pulled her green kirtle a little above her knee, and she has braided her yellow hair a little above her brow, and she is to her father's hall as fast as she can. 24 ladies fair were playing at the ball, and out then came the fair Janet, the flower of them all. 24 ladies fair were playing at the chess, and out then came the fair Janet, as green as bottle glass. Out then spoke an old gray knight, lay over the castle wall, and says, "Alas, fair Janet, for thee, but we'll all be blamed all. Hold your tongue, you old-faced knight, some ill death may ye die. Father my babe, on whom I will, I'll father none on thee." Out then spoke her father dear, and he spoke meek and mild. "And ever, alas, sweet Janet," he says, "I think thou art with child. If that I am with child, father, myself alone shall bear the blame. There's never a laird in about your hall shall get the babe's name. If my love were an earthly knight, as he's an elfin gray, I would not give my own true love for no lord that you have. The steed that my true love rides on is lighter than the wind, with silver he is shod before, with burning gold behind." And Janet has kilted her green kirtle a little above her knee. She has braided her yellow hair a little above her brow, and she's away to Carter Hall as fast as she can. When she came to Carter Hall, Tamlin was at the well, and there she found his steed standing, but away was himself. She had not pulled a double rose, a rose but only two, till up then started young Tamlin, says, "Lady, thou pull'st no more. Why pull'st thou the rose, Janet, among the grove so green, and all to kill the bonny babe that we got us between? Oh, tell me, Tamlin," she says, "for Christ's sake that died on tree, if ever you was in holy chapel or Christendom did see?" "Roxburgh, he was my father, took me him to dwell, And once it fell upon a day that woe did me betide, and once it fell upon a day, a cold day and snow, we were from the hunting come that from my horse I fell. The queen of fairies, she caught me in yon green hill do dwell, and pleasant is the fairy land, but an eerie tale to tell. At the end of 7 years we pay a tithe to hell, and I am so fair and full of flesh I feared it be myself. But the night is Halloween, lady, the morn is Hallow Day. Then win me, and ye will, for well I know ye may. Just at the mark of midnight hour the fairy folk will ride, and they will would their true love win, at Miles Cross they may abide. But how shall I know thee, Tim Lynn, or how my true love know, among so many unknown knights, the like I never saw? Oh, first let pass the black, lady, and soon let pass the brown. But quickly run to the milk-white steed and pull you this rider down. For I'll ride on the milk-white steed and I nearest the town. Because I was an earthly knight, they give me that renown. My right hand will be gloved, lady, my left hand will be bare. Cocked up shall be my bonnet and combed down shall be my hair. And though the tokens I give thee, I doubt I will be there. They will turn me in your arms, lady, into an ass and an adder. But hold me fast and fear me not, I am your child's father. They'll turn me into a bear so grim and then a lion bold, but hold me fast and fear me not, and ye shall love your child. Again, they'll turn me in your arms to a red-hot band of iron, but hold me fast and fear me not, I'll do you no harm. And last, they'll turn me in your arms into the burning coal, then throw me into well water, oh, throw me in with speed. And then I'll be your own true love, I'll turn a naked knight, then cover me with your green mantle and hide me out of sight. Gloomy, gloomy was the night, and eerie was the way, as fair Jenny in her green mantle to Miles Cross she did go. At the mark of the midnight hour she heard the bridal sing. She was as glad at that as any earthly thing. First she let the black pass by, and soon she let the brown. But quickly she ran to the milk-white steed and pulled the rider down. So well she minded what he did say, and young Tim Lynn did win, soon covered him with her green mantle, as blithe a bird in spring. Out then, spoke the queen of fairies, out of a bush of broom, them that has gotten young Tim Lynn has gotten a stately groom. Out then spoke the queen of fairies, an angry woman was she. Shame betide her ill-fared face, and ill death may she die, for she's taken away the bonniest knight and all my company. But had I known, Tam Lynn, she said, what now this night I see, I would have taken out thy two gray eye and put them in yon tree. Now, there's a lot of early feminist kind of headstrong, I do what I want kind of energy in this song, but one very specific line is important to pay attention to, and that's, why pulls thou the rose, Janet, among the grove so green, and all to kill the bonny babe that we got us between? In the whole story, it can be easily overlooked, but its presence is a clear indication that most women have traditionally understood that certain plants would induce a miscarriage, saving them from the tragedy that could come from an unplanned pregnancy, or perhaps from the burden of one or more mouth to feed when you can't even afford to feed yourself or your other children. Regardless which direction you look at it, birth has always been a matter of life and death. Ever wonder why fairy tale creatures or fairy tale characters seem to have a dead mother? First of all, as there was no decent form of prevention, pregnancy was much more likely to happen in the first place. This ties to that old image or stereotype of the bedraggled housewife with 10 under 10 at her heels. The oldest girl helping by taking care of the youngest, and that didn't include all the children they had likely died early. Historically, 1 in 4 children died before 1, and almost half died before adulthood. That means if you had 10 births, at least two would die before the age of one, and probably another 3 to 4 would die before reaching maturity. That's not including all the miscarriages and stillbirths. And so with that, I think let's look at Queen Anne as an example. This is a woman who would have had the best of medical care, best of diet, and everything else to lead to its successful birth. The nation effing depended on it. But despite this, she had 17 pregnancies, none of which survived into adulthood. Of all of her pregnancies, she had 5 stillborn children and 7 miscarriages. And of the children that were successfully birthed, 2 lived less than a day, and 2 died under the age of 2. And of all of those, of 17 pregnancies, only one child lived through to the age of 11, and that was Prince William. And he is listed as having died of an unknown disease. We don't know what killed him. But there were so many things that went around, there's no telling. But I give her as an example, because if it was this bad for the Queen of England, how much worse would it be for the average woman? The gift of life is eternally tied with the shadow of death. And so when a woman discovered she was pregnant, many would have to make sure their affairs were in order because their chance of dying in labor was so high. Many would go ahead and take that moment, oh, I'm pregnant, shit, let me go ahead and either A, make a will because I haven't made one before and this is my first pregnancy, or let me go ahead and update my will if you were rich enough to have anything to leave to begin with. So every woman, no matter the class, was forced with choice of possibly dying from childbirth or losing yet another child early. The mental taxation that this took, it's hard to put into words. I don't think that words can capture the kind of it just can't. Death was the larger possibility on one side or the other. Either way you looked at it, somebody was more than likely going to die. Now, I'm not here to talk about the should she, shouldn't she. I'm just talking about the fact that it, like so much we talk about here, is absolutely nothing new. It was always a hushed topic spoken of only in women's circles, and often they knew who to turn to. The midwife, healing woman, wise woman, and in Appalachia, she's called the granny woman. And she's an amazing example of how the traditions of early modern England and Scotland and Ireland continued to change very little over hundreds of years. Hidden high in the hills where people were left to live as they would by those lowlanders of the Carolina coasts. When there was no formal doctor within easy reach, you reached out to the granny woman. She knew all the herbal remedies for whatever was bothering you. From an elderberry cough syrup to resetting bones, the granny woman was who you went to, and that lady was the local healer, and typically an older woman who'd been working and learning the arts of various forms of healing since a young age. She was also often the only affordable option the average person had, as she would often take whatever you could afford, even if it was just a bit of spare food that you had. You gave what you could, and she gave what she could. However, to end this, I want to take another look at an example that is from a bit later, about 1750, and that's called Bonnie Jean of Aberdeen, which also alludes to abortion in a few different ways. Now, there are a couple of really interesting plays that happen in this song. The first is in the lines, "If you should take your word and rue, what should become of Jenny then?" Now, there's double wordplay here in rue as in regret, meaning that Jean is asking Jockey what she would do if he ended up regretting lying with her and ran off. However, rue is also a traditional abortifacient herb that can also be really deadly, just like childbirth. The second actually comes from the woodblock that goes with the song. It's much, much more intricate than any we've seen so far, but it is also chock-a-block full of symbolism. There are two figures in the woodblock. The one on the right is likely Apollo, as indicated by his sunlight crown. I'm sorry, I just said right, left. And the other is Hermes, as indicated by him carrying his healing staff of Caduceus. Now, both of these figures are associated deeply with alchemy, so it's likely this woodcut was just reused from some previous printed book on alchemy or medicine. But the fact that it is paired with this song about abortion is telling that even the male printers knew the significance of the use of rue. There are also some mixed messages because the center of the image is full of pears, a symbol of the divine feminine abundance, as well as cornucopias and pomegranates, symbols of fertility, specifically with the cornucopia and the pomegranate, both symbols of female fertility, the pomegranate being an empty vessel to be filled with, you know, fruits. And the pomegranate being kind of, if you've ever opened a pomegranate, kind of empty but full of seed. I don't know why I felt like I needed to lay out that symbolism, but there you go. Well, there's a large open box dead center that gives space for where a title should be. It is also highly symbolic of that, again, empty feminine, that a place for growth. It's almost as if the printer themselves couldn't make up their mind on where they fell in the argument. All that said, I give you Bonnie Jean of Aberdeen. My Bonnie Jean, long have I been seeking thee from morn to e'en. Thy bonny face, so full of grace, the like is not in Aberdeen. I was as brisk as any lad when first thy bonny face I saw. Come sit thee down, my bonny maid, and give to me kiss or twa. A kiss or twa if I should give, I know not how it may be ta'en, for suddenly you'd me betray, 'tis better for to lie alone. First you must seek, and I'll say nay. You know a woman's modesty. Come, slide your hand about my neck. When I cry cease, let me not be. For would I give, I tell the truth, for one sweet kiss of thee, my dear. For all the pleasures of this earth, there's nothing can with thee compare. Thy cherry cheeks, thy coal-black hair, a brisker lass was never seen. There's none with thee that can compare in Edinburgh or Aberdeen. When first thy bonny face I saw, such charming eyes were never seen. Thou art the true prospect of grace, the like is not in Aberdeen. Thy beauty fair doth me ensnare since e'er I saw your bonny face. Therefore, my dear, you need not fear to grant me that charming bliss, since I have houses and lands enough to portion me with any man. If you should take your word and rue, what should become of Jenny then? If you have lands at your command, a good housewife you then shall be. I think then for a priest will send, and then my dear will married be. My Bonnie Jean, where have you been, and thy many seeking thee? I have been down in yonder green, kissing jockey and jockey me. My many sent me to the well, the night was dark, I could not see. My foot did slip, and then I fell, and jockey fell on top of me. My Bonnie Jean, thou goest with bairn, say the lass, how can that be? For he lay ne'er a night with me, but 6 and 7, 4 and 3. But if he be cunning, I'll be crafty. If he be crafty, I'll be sly. If he were the bonniest lad in the land, he'll never get another bairn with me. You know, one of the reasons I started this whole project was because I was curious to see why certain songs lasted and some didn't. And I think this gives a really good kind of juxtaposition. The storytelling in Tamlin is just so much more epic. And even though these two characters of Jean and Janet are very similar in their sassy, I do what I want kind of mentality, I mean, you can probably tell by the way that I read that the second one, Bonnie Jean, even though it has a lot more rhyming and it's much more modern, the sentence structure and everything that's in it makes it so hard to even just read. I can't imagine trying to actually sing out in this kind of grammatical structure. And that's something that I think we'll see a lot more as we go through these songs, is that the ones that do tend to last tend to be ones with stronger story structure, but also simpler, stronger story, simpler sentence structure. They're not trying to be too fancy. It's just out there. Now, the question that we now have to ask is is this change in structure more to do with changing of times, or is it because, or is it that structure that makes it last? We have to remember that the examples that we're reading are not ones that have been, you know, rewritten and resung, as so, for example, Tamlin is very famously done by Fairport Convention. That is not the version I read, but the version that I read is super duper close to the one that I read. And the one that I read is from around the same time as Bonnie Jean. So people are still talking the same. These are the questions. Like, why do some lasts? Why don't some just kind of fall away? And I'm going to bring everything full circle and say the same applies to folk tales, folklore, etc. Why did the granny woman last? She was isolated. Why do some certain traditional kind of folk belief last? And a good place to find those folk beliefs is in the Strange South podcast, which I'm going to go ahead and promote because it's amazing and I think everyone should listen to it. But that again is if you like things such as weird Bigfoot stories and ghost stories, or even just weirdness in general. But again, I'd hope you'd let your curiosity follow you. And with that, I'll be saying a saucy, saucy goodnight. However, just a heads up, it may be a few weeks before I get another out. Just depends on how much career stuff is going on and how crazy the world gets. But before I do, because we were talking about Aberdeen, this just hit me, and I do want to give a shout out. No chance in hell that anybody's listening. But if I actually wrote this episode on the day that the Queen passed, and so as I'm typing up, you know, and writing about Bonnie Jean of Aberdeen, there was actually a small little clip that some of you may have seen of, it was at the Aberdeen airport, and it was a couple of local workers who were caught flossing on the very edge of the screen on a news report. Go look it up. It's fantastic. And I want to bring it up just because that kind of playful energy is what this podcast is trying to capture, that, you know, that the world can be falling around down around you, or some major shit can be happening, but that doesn't mean that we can't stop a second and just laugh and have a bit of fun, because if we're not doing that, there's no point in living if we can't stop and laugh. So again, good night, you little saucy bastards, and I will see you again next time. Bye.